from Team Cerralongo, and you're watching TheFightNerd.com.
This is Candy Sugar Free Code Tour, and you're watching TheFightNerd.com.
This is the Fight Professor, Stephen Quadros, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
John Wertheim, author of Blood and Gate. Got
schooled
by FightNerd.com.
This is Marty Kamen. You're watching FightNerd.com. This is Nathan Africa Tour, and you just got schooled by the Fight Nerd.
See it? What is it?
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Not quite live from New York. You're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
Hey, this is the Fight Nerd, and welcome back to another edition of Fight Nerd Radio. Today is July 13th, 2009, and we are just 2 days after UFC 100, event subtitled Making History, and it definitely did make some history for the record books. We saw Brock Lesnar retain his title, or rather unify the World Heavyweight title against his Frank Mir. We also saw George St. Pierre retain his title against Thiago Alves. We're going to talk about that and some of the other matches that we saw at UFC 100 a little bit later on. Coming up later also, we're going to have Mikey the Eastside Assassin Burnett. For those fans who might be a little bit newer, Mikey was part of the UFC way back when the teenage numbers of the shows. He used to fight for Ken Shamrock's Lion's Den, back when the Lion's Den was considered one of the top teams in the UFC and mixed martial arts. And he's seen quite a bit of the sport change, so we're going to talk to him a little bit later on today. So first, before I get started with any of the fight stuff, I want to bring up that you might notice that I'm flying solo today on the podcast. The reason for this is because I've decided just to kind of give it a shot on my own for a few episodes and see how it goes. For the past four shows, we've had War and Peace from NewYorkFightScene.com on, we've had Eddie Goldman from No Holds Barred Radio, and we had Brian Last featured last week on the show. So before I say anything else, I want to once again thank those guys for coming on to the show, and I'm sure eventually we're going to have them back on talk some more. But for the time being, I've decided just to go solo for a little bit because I personally have not been happy with my performance on the last four shows. I felt like that with the co-hosts, I was still kind of interviewing them and making them more of guests, less than I was having a good dialogue and kind of interacting. And that might be partially because of my awkwardness still just being on this microphone. It's kind of weird. For people who haven't ever done a podcast before, it's an odd thing to basically be in a room having to talk on a microphone. I mean, I'm sure if you heard the last four shows, you might notice it just sounded a little funny at some points. Because, you know, we're all getting started with this thing. We're all a little bit noobish, if you will, for lack of a better word, to do this kind of thing. It's an odd thing. It's a little bit nerve-wracking. In fact, it's a little bit more weird for me than it is to interview fighters, to be just talking into blank space right now. But something I got to get used to, and until I can get used to it and work on my skills a bit more, I'm going to be flying solo and not bringing back any co-hosts until I'm ready to go. But once again, I want to thank all my previous co-hosts, and they're welcome back anytime, especially once I'm more well-prepared to do these things. So without further ado, let's get down to business, and that business will be UFC 100. It's been quite a calm for the last few weeks, really. Not too many events were coming up leading into this. There was, you know, Strikeforce Challengers, there was the Ultimate Chaos event. But otherwise, not too many competitors were willing to rear their heads in the build-up for this event. So first thing I want to talk about, of course, is Brock Lesnar, Frank Mir. Now, most people have been more concerned with Lesnar's post-fight antics than they have with the actual fight itself. And we're going to talk about that, of course, too, but I want to break down the fight first and analyze what went on in that. Now, in that fight, we saw Brock do what he always does, or has done best, really, and that's wrestle. He uses his size, he uses his takedowns, he uses his wrestling, he uses that weight, pushes it down on the guys, holds it there, and beats their face into a bloody pulp. And unfortunately for Mir, he was a victim today of that. Mir attempted to trade a little blows in the beginning of the fight, and Lesnar was not having it. Lesnar took him down right away and just went to work. Blooded his face up quite quickly, too. I didn't expect to see Mir get bloodied open that quickly. Those pans of Lesnar definitely got some power behind him. For me, that's always been something I've wondered about Brock Lesnar, is how much power do those hands have? I know he's got a ton of weight behind those fists, but is he striking with power yet? And on the ground, he's definitely showing some pretty strong abilities there to be able to cut open Mir with not too many shots to the face. Unfortunately for Mir, for the rest of the fight, didn't go too well. Spent pretty much most of the first on his back, just absorbing blows. By the second round, he was able to trade a little bit more blows, and he was actually having a much better time against Brock. He was outstriking Brock quite a bit. Unfortunately, Brock was able to catch a lazy kick that Mir threw. Brock pushed him up against the fence, and for some reason that I don't know why he would do this, Frank Mir threw a flying knee. Well, if you want to call it a flying knee, it was more like a leaping knee. So basically, for those who didn't see it, Lesnar had one of Frank Mir's legs trapped. And with that other free leg that Mir had, Mir attempted to throw a knee, just like we saw Uriah Faber do quite some time ago. Difference being Uriah Faber's a lot smaller, a lot faster, and a little bit better of a striker, and was able to actually land some stuff with that. Lesnar had none of it. Lesnar took him right down from that knee, and that flying knee was really the cardinal error that Frank Mir made in his fight strategy. If you can even call it that, it was just simply kind of a desperation move, I think. I think it was a very bad idea on Mir's part, and I'm sure he'll agree with me if we get a chance to talk to him at some point. So from there, Lesnar continued to pound out Mir, pushed him up against the cage, and just finished him right there. And you gotta wonder if that cage wasn't there, how much of a difference that would make, really. That's one argument you could hear. You know, if it was a ring, Lesnar could have had actually a restart, but I don't think it would have made much of a difference at that point. Mir was just eating the blows, not answering them back, and that was the end of that fight. And that sort of things got exciting. So post-fight, Brock starts running around, screaming his head off. The fans are booing the place. He ends up getting right back in Frank Mir's face as Mir is getting back to his feet and cursing him out once again. Then he starts throwing the middle fingers to the crowd. It was not a good scene, especially if you consider all the mainstream press that was there. But we'll talk about that in a bit. And then, of course, the post-fight interview that pissed a lot of people off more so was the fact that Brock continued to urge the crowd to boo him and then went out of his way to make sure that he told everybody he was drinking a Coors Light. Now, watching this on TV, it looked like he meant it a little bit, you know, lighthearted more so than it was being mean or just being a jerk. It was a stupid comment to say, but nonetheless, it was meant to be a joke. I think most people took it the wrong way. I still don't like what he said. The fact that he mentioned Coors Light because Bud Light wouldn't give him sponsorship money kind of shows you the character of Brock. And then Brock went on to tell the audience that he was going to be on top of his wife tonight, which means, I don't need to fill in the blanks for you guys at home. And that's something you really don't want to hear a fighter say. I mean, you got to remember, you've got mainstream press this event. This was the biggest event in UFC's history. It drew one of the largest crowds ever for it, which, by the way, if anyone's wondering, sold out and made a $5.1 million live gate, which is only second to Lydell Ortiz 2, which got $5.4 million. Little fight nerd fact for you right there. So the mainstream press is covering this stuff, and they see this giant beast of a man, Brock Lesnar, beating up this guy, and then running around the ring, throwing middle fingers, cursing people out. Not good for the sport. Not good for the sport at all. And we've seen Brock, of course, in the past, previously at the press conference, in fact, for UFC 100. I didn't have to go too far into the past to talk about this. We just talked about the day before at the press conference, when Brock decided he didn't like the chairs at the UFC press conference and threw a little hissy fit. Ended up having to have Dana White talk him down from leaving. So the question is this the man that the mainstream press is going to say is the face of MMA right now? Because at this time, there really is not too many guys being pushed. We have Anderson Silva, but he doesn't quite speak English, even though he is one of the most popular fighters right now. Randy Couture is on his way out. Chuck Liddell is on his way out. So is Brock going to be the new face of UFC? Now, to have a bad guy be the face of UFC isn't something we haven't seen in the past. Tito Ortiz, of course, sold tons of tickets being that evil bad guy. Everybody wanted to see him get taken down a notch. Difference was, Tito was, if you really can, you could say he was actually a little bit classier than Brock in this situation. That's pushing it right there, saying that, but it's true. Tito, as much as the bad things he did, he never cursed out the audience quite as bad as that. I don't believe he ever cursed out people who didn't sponsor him, and I think he was a little less selfish, even though we've seen Tito's business plans now be a little different. He wasn't quite as selfish as in saying, oh, you guys didn't sponsor me, well, you guys can kiss my ass. And that's pretty much what he said to Bud Light and the UFC. Because since we know Bud Light is the official beer sponsor of the UFC now, and for Brock to go out of his way to tell the sponsor, you didn't give me money, so screw you, that's just not cool. And for Dana White to even put up with that twice in 2 days, those antics of Brock, that says a lot right there about Dana White himself. To his credit, however, we have a hero showing his face in this situation, that being Shane Carwin. Shane Carwin recently wrote on his Twitter that he was also not too pleased with Brock Lesnar's antics. He wrote, as an exact quote, "How you gonna flip off the great fans of the UFC? These are the best fans in the world. What a dot dot dot. And he won't be able to lay on Kane or me." So Shane Carwin also then went into further detail. I'm gonna be quoting right now off his website. "The flipping off of the fans that just lined your pocket with millions of dollars is just lame. He may be a champion, but he has a long way to go before he earns the respect of a champion. The fans are why we do this, Brock. This sport is not about fat paychecks and drama. It is about hard work and sacrifice for a shot to do what you did last night." And Shane continued to go on a pretty good rant there about Brock's post-fight antics, and essentially said, you know, he's looking forward to getting a chance at Brock, because after Shane's match against Cain Velasquez coming up soon, one of those two guys is going to be taking Brock next. And that brings us to a good point, is what's going to happen when Brock meets somebody who's actually his size? Both Shane Carwin and Cain Velasquez have the potential to take out Brock Lesnar, or at least put on a much better fight. Now, Shane Carwin is definitely no joke when it comes to the fight world. And after his match against Cain Velasquez coming up very soon, we're going to see which one of these two guys will face Brock for that title. And both of them can easily give Brock a run for his money. But that's to be determined what's going to happen once we see what goes down at an upcoming UFC show. Nonetheless, Brock better start watching his belt. But then again, after either of these two guys are gone, who's in the title scene for Brock's belt? Right now, the heavyweight title scene in the UFC is a bit of a mess, having Brock just pretty much plow through Mir, Couture. There's not too many guys left. I do want to say that Frank Mir looked like he was in the best shape ever in his career for this fight against Brock. Brock looked, of course, beefy as always, eating all of his Jack's Lynx beef jerky, preparing for the fight. But Mir looked pretty awesome. I was a little worried about his training coming into this, about his cardio, but he looked like he was okay as far as physical. But of course, taking a beating does take a big toll on your stamina, and that had to do with a lot of the downfall of Frank Mir in this fight. But we'll see what happens. We'll see if he bounces back. What's next for Mir? I really couldn't tell you. I don't think a rematch is in the works. I don't really think we need to see a third match, but we're probably going to get one of those eventually. Personally, I think Mir should just kind of take a few steps back, take some time off, as he will have to take time off from that beating, and figure out what to do next, figure out what went wrong in this fight, and work on things. And he was humble in his loss, even saying he needs to work on a few more things, get some things straightened out. So we'll see him back in the cage, I'm sure, hope before the end of this year. It'd be nice to see him maybe back at the New Year's show. And we'll see if Frank Mir's got anything left and can maybe get himself a third fight with Brock coming up soon and have a nice ending to this trilogy. So we're going to see what happens to Brock, but I have a feeling Brock's going to be holding on to that title for quite some time. Let's just hope his antics kind of start to cool down. A lot of pundits have said he's still kind of in the WWE state of mind, where he's just walking around pretending to be that big bad guy, that big heel, get the crowd riled up. And part of it is probably that. He's an entertainer at heart. But the other part of it is just a man who really likes his paychecks. How much of this is fact, how much of this is fiction, still to be determined. We've only seen Brock a few times now. His total time in the octagon is still not very long. Only 5 fights and a UFC title around his waist. The future is looking interesting for the UFC's heavyweight division. We'll see what happens with that. Something else I want to talk about related to Brock and Mir is, of course, UFC 100 being the very historic event. And Mike Goldberg actually mentioned this on the pay-per-view. He had mentioned at the very first UFC, we saw Little Royce Gracie, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy, taking on the bigger man and going through him one by one. And here we are, UFC 100. And what's the main event again? The Jiu-Jitsu guy taking on the wrestler, taking on the much bigger guy. The difference was, in the older days of the UFC, Royce Gracie, or whoever the smaller guy was, would typically end up taking the wins at that time. The grappling aspect was very foreign, and the little man could still win. But now we've come over 100 events later, and things have changed quite a bit. Now the weight and size has become a big, big part of the sport. Back in the early days of UFC, of course, there were no weight classes, there were no rules, and now we've got a lot of rules, and we've got 5 weight classes. So in those days, it wasn't common to see a big man win up until the eventual arrival of Mark Coleman. And even then, at that point, they started to kind of have weight classes about UFC 12, which is when Mark Coleman's era began, the wrestler's era. But this match you can kind of liken to the Gracie Severn effect. We had a wrestler taking on a jiu-jitsu guy, and in this case, the wrestler won. And a lot of this has to do with, again, the size issue of this fight. In the old days, you had the smaller guys taking on the big guys, and the smaller guys would win, as I just mentioned. But nowadays, the sport has caught up with itself. We're seeing people cross-training, of course, as we have for the last 5, 6, 8 years, whatever, however long you want to say it's been. People are cross-training, and the skills are getting better. As the skills get better, size becomes a much bigger part of the game. I want to talk about Olympic judo. Olympic judo used to have no weight classes also, up until the late 70s, when there was a Dutch judoka who was a huge, huge guy, and he ended up just going through all the smaller guys purely because of his size. And it's because of that that we now have weight classes in Olympic judo. So for the UFC now, here we have heavyweight division, and the weight has still become a factor. Skills have become so good and improved so much since day one of UFC that now we're at the point where weight really is a big factor. In the old days, you didn't really see as much weight cutting. Now you're seeing guys be using it as a big strategy. George St. Pierre, Thiago Alves, both were cutting easily 20, 30 pounds for this fight. And weight cutting back in the teenage days, as we'll talk to Mike Burnett in the future, he can tell you, weight cutting was not really a big thing. It's not necessarily a healthy thing. Wrestlers can do it. But it's a strategy we didn't see employed back in the old days. So the purpose of this rant, essentially, is that we've come to the point now where the skills on all fighters have become so good that the weight has really become the biggest factor. That's saying a lot. So if you look at the old days, we can kind of just throw those out at this point. There's no more style versus style. Everybody's doing the same thing. Everybody's training the same way. There's variations here and there depending on trainers and coaches, but nonetheless, we're at the point now where the sport is probably at its peak of evolution. Now it's going to come down to the fighters and strategies within fighters' personal bodies, such as their physique and structure, that will determine how the fights go on. Alright, now another fight I want to talk about briefly, very briefly, because there's not much to say about it. George St. Pierre, Thiago Alves. George St. Pierre went 5 rounds to Alves and just dominated the crap out of him. It was not necessarily the most exciting fight of the night, but it saw St. Pierre just dominate a man who most said was going to be the toughest test for him. And granted, Alves was very tough. He was a warrior all the way. Even in the last round, he was still throwing hands with a lot of power, a lot of force behind his strikes. And George St. Pierre just was not able to finish him, but he's able to dominate him, and that was pretty unbelievable. So hats off to both these guys. It's not too much I want to say about this fight. other than St. Pierre tore his groin, or his abductor muscle, in the fourth round. And if anybody remembers hearing him say that, it's kind of funny, but not too funny, because it's not necessarily a fun injury to have. But for George St. Pierre to have that injury and to keep going, have that still kind of same kind of heart as he had in the first rounds, that says a lot about that man. He's going to be going all the way for sure. And the question is now, what happens with both of these men? Alves was the top dog right under George St. Pierre, and now that George St. Pierre has taken him out of the yard, who's next for St. Pierre? And I think GSP even admitted that after the fight. You know, next up, really, he could have Anderson Silva, but otherwise, the welterweight division has been cleaned out. There's not too many guys behind him anymore. So from here on out, looks like we can just start praying for Anderson Silva to take on George St. Pierre. And I, for one, would like to see that fight, as I'm sure all of you would. Not much else I can say about that, so we're just going to move right along to Henderson versus Bisping. So Dan Henderson and Michael Bisping went at it for two rounds until Henderson was able to land a big, solid hook that took down Bisping, knocked him off his feet, and finished him with another punch on the ground that a lot of fans are not happy about, but we'll talk about that in a few seconds. I was happy to see Dan Henderson back in action, and I don't mean just seeing him in the fight again, I mean seeing him motivated. This was a Henderson with a fire under his ass. He wanted to finish this fight, he wanted to win this fight, and that's what he went out to do. We've seen Henderson like this before in previous fights in Pride against guys like Wanderlei Silva. And, this was kind of like the same Dan Henderson, I feel, that we saw win the Pride Middleweight Grand Prix and the Pride Welterweight Grand Prix a few years back. It was motivated, you know, and he was looking to get a win. I'll get more than a win. He was looking to get a title around his waist. And I think now we're going to see Henderson in contention for that title coming up against Anderson Silva. Again, we're mentioning Anderson Silva, and we're only about 10 minutes into this podcast. But he's the guy to beat right now for a lot of fighters out there. I was happy to see Henderson get this win. Now, believe it or not, I actually have been a fan of Michael Bisping. A lot of people hate Bisping's attitude. I've let it fly because I've liked his skills. Granted, in England, he did a lot better because there's still not much ground fighting going on there. And here in America, I still didn't mind him too much. His personality was a bit of a douchebag, as Henderson has said in the past. But I still enjoyed his skills. This fight here, he went at it, but he couldn't offer too much back against Henderson. Now, the finish, of course, was that big hook that Bisping more or less walked into, which Henderson also said he is training to set that up all along. But people have been complaining about the final blow, and I hadn't actually watched the fight live. I had watched it in a replay, so before I saw the fight, I had read all the stuff about Henderson hitting Bisping after the bell or after the fight when it should have been over. And seeing the fight on TV finally, I don't understand what the controversy was about. This is the UFC, this is MMA. Just because a guy is knocked out doesn't mean a fight is over. We've seen people get knocked down plenty of times, but this isn't boxing. There's no 10 count. So when a guy goes to the ground and he's not clearly out, or the referee hasn't said get off him yet, you got to keep going until you finish. It would be different if the bell had rang and Henderson was pummeling Bisping with some shots, but there was no bell yet. It wasn't the end of the round. The referee hadn't jumped in yet. Bisping was out on the floor. The referee wasn't in between them yet. The referee was still letting it go, and you could see the referee was still behind both fighters at the time this happened. Bisping hit the ground. Henderson followed up, and it was at that point that the referee realized that Bisping was out and Henderson was taken off him. So I don't see any problem with what happened to Henderson, Bisping's ending. Whatever controversy people see, I don't believe it happened. I don't see it at all. There's no problem with me on that end from the outcome of that fight. And for people that continue to argue about this, I don't see what they're arguing about. Simple as that. It's MMA. Fight goes to the ground, you keep fighting on the ground until referee says stop. Simple as that. Alright, a few other matches we're going to talk about. Akiyama made his UFC debut against Alan Belcher. Sexyama had a good back-and-forth fight, which actually was the fight of the night at UFC. And Akiyama and Belcher just traded. It was a great fight. I've been a fan of Akiyama from his Japanese days, and Belcher, of course, also. I've been a big fan of. I used to like him more just because his name sounded funny, but luckily he proved himself as being an actual good fighter. And I've looked forward to seeing his fights. And this match against Belcher, really back and forth. This was probably one of the more controversial fights tonight, more so than the Henderson-Bisping ending, and the fact that a few people, I'm sure many more than just a few people, feel that Belcher was robbed slightly, just slightly, in this fight. This was a fight that if I was judge, I would not want to have to call. It was so close. First round, definitely went to Akiyama. Second round, definitely went to Belcher. Third round, really hard to say. At that point, both guys were hitting hard. They were connecting with shots. It was so hard to call. I would not have wanted to be a judge for that fight. It would be one of those fights where I would have been happy with a draw. I think a lot of the controversy might come from the fact that one of the judges gave Akiyama a perfect three-round score. Someone gave him a 30, or rather, the score was 30-28. One of the judges' scorecards. I don't see how any of those rounds could have been perfect for Akiyama, considering how back and forth the fight was. Nothing was really ever a 10-9 or, I don't see how any of the rounds were ever that dominant for Akiyama. He was pushing the pace, but then again, Belcher was able to break up that pace quite a lot. Belcher had heavy hands, had good strikes. Akiyama also had good strikes, good hands. When it came to the ground, what little there was there, it was still back and forth. It was a very tough fight to call. I don't think it's worth seeing a rematch for. I want to see these guys just move on with their careers and take it to the next level. But I'm not one of those people that feels that Akiyama should not have won this match. I don't think Belcher was robbed either. I think it was a very close fight. Could have gone either way. Belcher has nothing to be ashamed of. He fought a hard, hard fight. And Akiyama on this evening was just a better fighter, according to the judges. Another fight that evening was John Jones against Jake O'Brien. I don't really need to say much about Jones because Jones just looked damn good once again. But I do want to talk a little bit about Mark Coleman, and not necessarily talk. Welcome back, Mark Coleman. I don't think most people expected Coleman to get a win off Stephen Bonner, especially Stephen Bonner. But that fight proved that Coleman's got something back in him. He looks motivated once again. This could be the third coming of Mark Coleman. I didn't say second coming because that was back in 2000 when he won the Pride Grand Prix, and he was the big Pride star in 2000. But since then, it's been a little downhill for the big man from Hammer House. And now this win against Bonner, well, I don't know if he's got title potential just yet, but at least he's back, and maybe we'll get to see him against Brock Lesnar. That wouldn't be so bad, since, if some fans remember, Coleman was supposed to fight Brock Lesnar a few events ago, but he had to pull out because of knee injury, and instead we got Heath Herring at the last minute. So that's not too bad. We saw Lesnar, of course, beat down Herring after three rounds of war. Now that Coleman's back, maybe he can offer something to Lesnar. Is Coleman going to ever be in the title scene? Most likely no, and if he does, I think at that age, what can he really do against Lesnar? It's too bad. This had been maybe 5 or 6 years ago, could have been a different story. But unfortunately at that point, Lesnar was still in pro wrestling, and Coleman was still in Pride. So, there you go. So aside from the two really big title fights and the whole historic thing of this being UFC 100, this event also is going to get some notoriety for being one of the shows that has the biggest ever bonus in the UFC's history. Each fighter who had gotten the bonuses up that night got $100,000 for their efforts. That included Knockout of the Night, which went to Dan Henderson against Bisping, and Tom Lawler got his Submission of the Night against C.B. Dolloway, and Fight of the Night went to Akiyama and Belcher. So that was a ton of money to be handing out for these fights. And speaking of a ton of money, we also have the salary breakdown for this event, and that's a pretty big number as well. UFC heavyweight champion Brock Lesnar took home $400,000 for his fight against Frank Mir. Frank Mir only earned $4,500. He would have earned a bonus of another $4,500 if he had beaten Brock, but unfortunately for him, that didn't happen. George St. Pierre was the only guy to actually match Lesnar's huge paycheck, and that's only because he won his fight. George St. Pierre was paid $200,000 to fight and another $200,000 bonus to get the win. Thiago Alves, on the other hand, made $60,000 for his fight. He would have gotten another bonus of $60,000 if he had won, which he didn't. And the reason I'm mentioning these paychecks here is because Brock Lesnar's $400,000 check for fighting is kind of absurd. Here's a guy who's had, this is his fifth fight in the UFC, and he's being paid almost $500,000 to show. There's no winning bonus to that amount. It didn't matter if he won or lost. He got paid almost $500,000 to show up there and to fight. And if you remember Tim Sylvia, when he had left the UFC under his problems, he had mentioned that he left because he was unhappy that Brock Lesnar was getting paid more money than he was. This is back when Brock just began in the UFC. He was paid more to lose to Frank Mir in 90 seconds than Tim Sylvia was for his war against Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira. We could talk all day about the business antics of Dana White and what he's doing with his money. I'm just wondering why he's pinning that much money on Brock Lesnar. Is Brock going to be the face of the company now? Like we just mentioned before, is this the guy that Dana White wants to be the face of the company? We have this rude former professional wrestler who has that mainstream status. He can draw the mainstream crowds and the pro wrestling fans over the sport. But at the same time, how much good is he doing for the sport? Having those kinds of bad attitudes at post-fight press conferences, at pre-fight press conferences, even in the octagon, have that kind of attitude. Is this the guy you want to pin all your money on? But on the same card, you had George St. Pierre, who could definitely be a face of the UFC. Granted, his English is not as good as Lesnar's, but what are you going to do? He's Canadian. They're not perfect. It's a strange time for the UFC. It's really a time of transition right now. With Chuck Liddell out of action pretty much for at least a year, there's no real poster boy right now for the UFC. Quinton Jackson has had his little interesting run that didn't seem to work out too well. We'll see if he can get back in the spotlight against Rashad Evans coming up soon. Maybe he'll give himself a light heavyweight shot again. But this time, there's really no poster boy in the UFC. And I don't know if I want to see Brock Lesnar be that poster boy. I don't know any fan who likes his antics in the ring, whether they're a Brock Lesnar fan or not. There's no reason to be that crazy, that uppity, or whatever word you want to use, after beating a man who'd beaten you before previously in 90 seconds. Something else I would like to discuss on the show is the UFC Hall of Fame. The UFC inducted two new guys into their Hall of Fame at UFC 100, and you'll notice I didn't say fighters, I said guys. One of them was Chuck the Iceman Liddell, and the other was Mask from Tap Out. The reason I bring this up is because Mask, plain and simple, isn't a fighter. you can't deny what he's done for the sport, or at least as far as the business aspect, and for really pushing fashion into the MMA world and bringing clothing into it first and foremost. But he's not a fighter. And, you know, here's a guy who actually died from doing something illegal. His death was caused from street racing. He crashed into something during a street race, in broad daylight, mind you, and this man is being rewarded with a star, if you will, in the UFC Hall of Fame. Again, I don't mean any disrespect to Mask or the Tap Out crew, but I think there's somebody else out there who might have deserved that spot in there who's also passed away. Maybe a former UFC middleweight champion who has fought against many of the best in the UFC, who's been with the UFC since the early, early days of the sport. A man named Evan Tanner. Have we forgotten about him already, folks? Evan Tanner passed away on September 5th, 2008, when he ended up having to walk back through a desert after a trip went a little bit wrong for him. Now here's a man who was a former champion. He's been with the UFC since UFC 18, I believe. He'd been fighting since roughly 1997. And I think about that time also Tap Out was beginning, maybe 96, 90, I can't remember what year Tap Out began in. But nonetheless, to induct a man, a businessman, and not a fighter into the Hall of Fame, a little questionable for me. I know Tap Out was a huge sponsor, of course, for the UFC, and they still are the biggest sponsor and one of the biggest names, if not the biggest name, in MMA sponsoring and clothing. But to ignore a fighter who was a champion and really did nothing wrong with the company ever, was always a loyal company man, to not give him that spot in the Hall of Fame, that's a little absurd to me. And why not just have three inductions into the Hall of Fame? Why just two, you know? You could have had three quite easily. Hopefully we'll see Tanner get inducted into the Hall of Fame at some point. I don't see why there's any reason not to, or why he shouldn't have gotten in this year, but that's Dana White's call and not mine. Also going on this weekend in Vegas was the UFC Fan Expo, which drew a huge number of people. I believe it's been estimated to be about 30,000 to 50,000 people who showed up for the two-day UFC Fan Expo event in Vegas. And unfortunately, I was not one of the people who was there. And I felt a little bad about not being there. As much as I wanted to go, really couldn't afford the trip out there. So you know what? We got on the line some people who have been at the show. Now, speaking of the Fight Expo, we have with us on the line Aaron Richmond from the Fight Council. He was at the Fan Expo as well as UFC 100. Aaron, thanks for being here on the show right now.
Well, thank you, Matthew. It's an honor to be here with you.
Now, you were at the Fan Expo, of course, promoting your booth, which was the Fight Council. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Fight Council is exactly?
Oh, absolutely. The MMA Fight Council is a brand new, it's actually a member thing, brand new company. We've got our website that just has gone live, it's MMAFightCouncil.com. It's a little tricky for some, sometimes it's COVNCIL. And that went live on Friday morning. The expo was Friday and Saturday, where we launched ourselves formally. And it was overwhelming. It was incredible. I have no idea what the official count was, although I'll be excited to hear about it, but it was equally 10, 15, maybe 20,000 people that came through. There was just a steady rush of people that love MMA, wanting to see us, wanting to hear about what we're doing, looking at some of the other things, very exciting stuff, fighters. Great time, really great time.
All right, so tell us a little about the expo itself. I mean, how many booths were there? Who was there? What was going on? Give us a little 411.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And you know, let me just say, it was an honor to be there because, like I said, we just launched ourselves, and we were one of, I believe, 150 exhibitors. So out of the thousands, many thousands of people that love the sport, that are involved in the business of the sport, we were one of the lucky few, really, to be able to be there. You know, who else was there? If you've seen the Tap-Out bus driving around the country, there it was right in the expo. And, of course, all decked out and all the Tap-Out products. And you know, everybody that you've heard of, all the products that you know and like, Sinister was there. They had Jay-Z, a very popular fighter in Japan. We had one of our sponsors who sponsored him, so we had Jay-Z with us for a little while in our booth. We had Fight Chicks with us, maybe heard their apparel as well. All the major brands that were well represented, some other brands that recognize the value of MMA and the market that we're in, came there really to break into the MMA market. You know, maybe products like Redline that mostly you'd see in gyms and bodybuilders might use, but that sort of thing. So there was everything that you've heard of, people that you haven't heard of. It was awesome. I mean, there was just, you know, the WEC had their stuff set up. All the fighters that you know and love were there, signing autographs, taking pictures. Rick Baylor came by and snapped a photo with him, and lots of others, really. It was a fantastic time.
Were there any fighters you got to meet that really were very exciting for you, that maybe was like a long-time fan of and you finally got to meet them? Anybody like that over there at the show?
You know, there were definitely some fighters that I respect, admire, that pay high to. But as far as really having a conversation with them, I got to tell you, that KZ to me was, I was very impressed with him. He's a very young guy. He's champion in Japan. People there would mob the place if he was there. Here, he's a fairly well-known and fairly well-respected fighter. But yeah, as a young Brazilian guy, and I was talking to him at length, and I just asked him, yeah, with the name that the people, you know, wanting to see him and here and take him over here, and it didn't bother him. And yet, he said he loves it. He said it's what he wanted. And he loves the fight, but he loves having fans that appreciate him. So yeah, I really have a ton of respect for him because, you know, the schedule was crazy. And you hear a lot of times celebrities complaining. He's just a very happy, grounded guy. So that was cool to get to know him a little bit better.
All right, now talk about some other businesses that were there. Were there any booths that stood out in your mind that were really going to be exciting stuff in the future?
Oh, sure. You know, let's see. Obviously, how can you not mention Tap Out, which I did already, but I mean, for goodness sake, they had a bus, a tour bus at the expo. I mean, that was just incredible. They also had, Sinister had a nice booth earlier where they seemed to have a really nice setup. Then One Stronger, a brand new MMA sportswear company, had a really nice setup. They had Jamie Varner in yesterday for a while, and that was very cool. The fight dentist was pretty neat. Adam Persky, again, someone who's working with us, but he had a neat little setup. There were so many. It's going to probably take me 2 or 3 days to remember everybody that I went and saw and looked at just in the few minutes that I had to run around. But it was off. There was an octagon in the center of the exhibit hall as well. There were some monster trucks inside, right out in the hallway. This was just so over the top. It's just like Las Vegas. It's hard to describe.
Sounds overwhelming, definitely. For lack of better words, very overwhelming. All right, now...
It really was overwhelming. I say that, yeah, I'm a grown man, but it's overwhelming. There's so much great, cool stuff. It's bigger than life everywhere you look, and to include the expo, it was very well done. The exposure I had for the MMA Fight Council, the exposure everyone else got, I believe was probably worth everything it took to get there.
Now, how much stuff did you end up buying at this show for yourself?
You know what? I had no time to buy anything for myself. So nothing. There's hundreds of apparel companies, and I've got to tell you, I probably would have loved to have one shirt from every place that was there. I didn't have time to buy myself anything.
Oh, wow. So insane.
We did get in and watch the fight. Now, we weren't able to get into the fight, you know, as a company just starting out. We're not looking at a budget that allows for such a thing. But we went to the Mandalay Bay Beach Bar, and, it was packed. It was sold out, and, you know, there were guys like Frank Drake walking around and watching the fights there. And so it was an amazing night of fights if you had a chance to watch them. I mean, it was fitting, a fitting way to end the UFC 100, you know, week and the expo. The fights were amazing.
How was the crowd at the expo and where you were at the Mandalay Bay watching the fights?
Yeah, it was one of the most. It was like being at a rock concert. You know, the whole 3 days. I mean, the kind of view that the energy that was there, it was very electric. You know, there was just a ton of energy. People basically wanting to, you know, run from one booth to another, and there was an autograph signing, and they literally ran to those. You know, and just everyone was excited. I mean, we had raffles where we gave product away from some of our sponsors, ExtremePainGear.com. We had some of their product. Ed Parker Jr. is the artist, and he's known as the guy behind American Kempo. The people were just excited the whole weekend. At the beach bar, it was literally like whoever in your mind is the biggest rock star in the world was there on the stage. And, you know, somebody would get into a sticky situation in the UFC, and the crowd would react, and someone would get free from a guillotine choke, and the crowd would react. And, when Bisping got knocked out, I mean, the crowd screamed and yelled and, you know, cheered. It was unbelievable. It was really exciting.
So a very high-energy crowd.
Say again?
So a very high-energy crowd.
Oh, absolutely. Not nonstop. I mean, it was...
Were they knowledgeable fan base also?
It was exactly what it should be. I mean, this is a very exciting time for MMA, all fans of the sport. And, you know, it's a milestone that's worthy of celebration. And it's not because of the UFC, really. I don't think. I think it's because of the sport. Because of how it's grown, yes, to include the UFC. But I think that's really what we're all there celebrating. You know, not just the fact that it's UFC 100, but the fact that MMA is so strong. Here in the U.S. and around the world.
Now, with this getting so much mainstream press coverage, how many fans were at the show that maybe hadn't just been casual fans at the first time? Was it a knowledgeable fan base of hardcores? Was it a lot of new people? What would you say was the audience overall as far as the personality type?
Right, right. Well, I'm just going to go out on a limb and guess based on the exposure that I had to people directly, and my guess would be that there was probably about a 60% size of a group that were like really hardcore. You know, there was not much that you might know that they wouldn't know. And maybe 40%, and even in varying degrees amongst the 40% of people that were a little more casual, you know. But truly, I mean, it was almost like, you know, there are certain groups of people that take pilgrimages and so forth. I think this was a lot like that. You know, not to relate it to a religious type of an event. It's certainly not, but my point being that for people who, I talk to people from all over the country. I talk to people there from Canada, from states all over the country. I had people come up to me. I'm there from Massachusetts. I had people come up to me from Massachusetts and say, we had to come meet you because we're like 40 minutes away in Massachusetts and we wanted to meet you. I mean, there are people from everywhere.
So really brought fans together.
All ranges of knowledge of the sport and all ranges geographically. It was just incredible.
That sounds pretty awesome. I wish I was there. Aaron, you have anything else you want to mention from the expo or from the show?
Well, just, I want everyone to please check out what we've started at MMAFightCouncil.com. I would love to also just let you know that, you know, over the next week to 10 days, as the site just went live, going to be some really incredible changes, additions, upgrades. So, check it out now. Please, come back. The Fight Nerd, obviously, you gotta stay on top of things here because, you know, the Fight Nerd has the most up-to-date, interesting information, obviously you must know something about it if you're listening to this, but, check him out, check out what he's doing, I really appreciate you, Matthew, for what you do and for taking the time to talk to me today.
Oh, thank you very much, Aaron. I appreciate your time. Have a good trip back, and thanks for chatting.
Thanks, man. Take care.
All right, you too. All right, so that was Aaron Richmond from the MMA Fight Council. Now, I wanted to also get a second opinion on the events of UFC Fan Expo and UFC 100. So joining me now from MMAreligion.com, we have Connor Cordova. Connor, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure, Matt.
All right, now you were, of course, also at the UFC Fan Expo and UFC 100. Let's talk a little about the Fan Expo first right now. You were there. What did you check out when you were there? What was going on?
Fan Expo was huge, Matt. It was a... really well put together, crowds swamped everywhere, multiple people signing, Hoist Gracie, Vanderlei Silva, I mean, they just brought the work in. And as well, they also inducted both Mask and Chuck Liddell into the UFC Hall of Fame, which was, I thought, very, very nice. So I thought the whole expo was a success.
Now, how many booths were there? I mean, there were so many people there. What were some of the big booths that were there and things that stood out in your mind?
The Tap Out booth was there. They were well represented, toe-to-toe, a bunch of other great clothing brands like that. And as far as Zion's had a booth and a lot of different energy. Pride was actually also represented there, which I was sort of surprised about, but I guess the demand was so big for Pride merchandise that UFC kind of resurrected that.
So I saw that. They had, I think, one of the, Joe Silva wearing a Pride t-shirt?
Yep. That was definitely... I was surprised, but, you know, if you own it, might as well wear it.
Yeah, definitely. Why not? Make some money off it. Now, what about some smaller booths there? Did you see any other small guys that stood out in your mind?
Yes. We had actually a couple cool up-and-starter companies. I think it was, I'll have to think of the exact name of it, but it was like Out of Game Fightwear or something like that, which was very, very cool. I don't have the exact name off the top of my head right now, but... you know, a lot of cool upstart companies there and, just trying to make their way in the biz. They're doing a good job.
Was it mostly clothing companies or were there other companies there besides, like, you know, obviously supplement companies also, but was there any other companies there besides clothing and supplements and nutritional things?
Well, there were some schools based out of there. The Pitt booth was there, so I got to hang out with my boy John Hackelman. And Kevin Kearns also had a booth from Burn with Kearns. He's my boy, too, so I got to get him props. And Mark Delagrotti from Utong was there, so all those schools are represented.
Oh, so really, yeah, international it seemed like, too, with, all around the U.S. I heard there are a lot of fans from around the world. Tell me a little bit about the people that were at the show, because, you know, I've been hearing some people came from across the states to check the show out. How was the crowd?
Well, I came across the state to check the show out, but it was great. Everybody was there. Everybody was pumped. I mean, thousands of people were swarming that place from all different places. So, I mean, it was just off the hook.
Now, how was the free swag? Did you get any good free stuff when you were there?
I did. I got some supplements. I don't know what they are, so I got to be careful. But lines for the fans there, I mean, were at least 4 hours long to get some of these signatures. So, like, Hoist Gracie had a huge line. The whole Pride booth, WBB booth, you know, was righteous.
Who'd you get to talk to as far as fighters when you were there?
I talked with Dan Henderson for a little bit. He was really cool, and, you know, I didn't see my boy Kevin Randleman down there, but I heard he was down there, so I want to give him props. You know, but they were very well represented. I got to say hi to my boy Vanderlei, so, you know, they were great. They were super fan-friendly, and really patient with everything, and, you know, just doing their job.
How much money did you end up spending at the show buying stuff?
Oh, it's trying to be conservative, but those UFC 100 shirts aren't cheap, so... Oh, I don't know, maybe... I'm going to say $80.
That's not too bad. That's actually not too bad.
Yeah, two shirts.
All right, now you also went to UFC 100, is that correct?
Yes, I did.
All right, now how was that show? Was a lot of the same crowd there at this event?
Yes, that show was absolutely phenomenal. Fantastic card.
As far as being there live, I mean, what was the environment like? What was the energy? I heard from Aaron Richmond, we just spoke to, that it was pretty pretty good energy from the crowd. What would you say?
Yeah, they were electric. I mean, the fan went nuts. I mean, GSP is loved. Loved, 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 loved. He had the biggest cheers of anybody there. I mean, not that people were booing Thiago, but they were just ecstatic for GSP and Frank Mir as well.
Now, what about for Brock Lesnar, especially with his post-fight antics? I heard there's plenty of booing at that.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, you know, you get after the fight, you know, your emotions sort of run wild. But he did what he had to do. So, but yeah, the fans weren't too happy.
Can you just tell me a little more about what else you saw at the Fan Expo? Because I'm really curious about that stuff.
The Fan Expo, it's the biggest one I've ever been to, Matt. I went to the one in Long Beach a couple years ago, very well put together. This one was just, you know, a grade above. UFC went above and beyond. They brought in super amounts of booze, both big and small. The fan turnout was bigger than expected, and I had a hard time getting in, and I had credentials. So
wow, there you go. Now, were there any fighters there that you got to meet for the first time ever that you were just super excited and went all fanboy over?
Hoist Gracie.
I mean,
unfortunately I couldn't get a sig, but, you know, 4 hours long, and I was running around pretty good, but I was excited that he was there. I mean, he's number one, 100, you know, you can't get much better than that.
All right, sounds good. Any other comments you want to talk about from the Expo or UFC 100?
UFC 100, absolutely historic. Probably the best card and best fights that I've ever seen live. I mean, the fight with Alan Belcher and Akiyama, I mean, can't trump that. Or that knockout, woo! Dan Henderson just, God, he's got a sledgehammer for a right hand. But everything great, I mean, I had a fantastic time.
All right, sounds good. And Connor, your new site is going to be MMAreligion.com. When's that going to launch?
That is going to launch September, Matt.
September, all right. So everybody's listening, check out MMAreligion.com in September. Connor, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Matt. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Thank you. All right, now having two guys talk is fine. How about we get a third opinion? Here with us now is Brett Siciliano from Extreme Fight Games, who is also at the MMA UFC Fan Expo. Brett, thanks for being here right now.
You got it, Matt.
Now, you had a booth, of course, at the Fight Expo. What were you selling?
We were selling the world's first MMA board game that we designed and invented approximately 6-7 months ago, and we were out there to make its debut and its release, and was awesome. Good times.
All right, now, you, of course, had a booth. Did you have a chance to walk around and talk to other people there and do some networking?
Yeah, I was pretty much prisoner at the booth, which was a good place to be prisoner at, and I couldn't probably see the whole expo if I had another 3 days. It was one of those things where it was just awesome. Everywhere you walked, everywhere you turned, there was just some fighter or someone to talk to, and it was awesome.
You have a chance to meet any of the fighters there yourself?
Yeah, actually, when it was winding down and all the fans had to leave, all the fighters were hanging out. It was just a big fighter fest, and I'm looking up, and there's Nick Diaz, and there was Rashad, and I mean, it was awesome. I just had never seen so many fighters in one little area, and thank God I had my digital camera with 1,000 more pictures left, because I was able to snap and record and have them sign our box. We have one of our fight boxes we got signed, our board game boxes, by about 30 or 40 different fighters, and it was pretty awesome.
Wow.
There's no more room to sign anymore.
That's pretty crazy. That's a lot of fighters.
Well, here's the thing. We said if everyone signs a mailing list, we're going to go ahead and probably give it away in a couple days, and we're going to draw some names. But as that thing started filling up, I'm telling you, it would look like a keeper. And we decided we're still going to do the right thing and give it away in a few days. But Ashley and myself, we're thinking to ourselves, every time we got Randy Couture, we got another signature on there, we're like, wow, we could probably get $5,000 for this on eBay. But that's not the right thing to do, so we're going to stick to our word and pull a couple lucky winners out and give some for prototype games away, so we're excited to do that. And there was also a fight museum that just had its grand opening right outside the Fight Expo, and we were able to also donate one of our board games, and hopefully the guy was going to stick it up on the shelves with some of the other stuff, so we'll see how that goes, too.
Very cool. Now, did you get a chance to walk around and check out some other booths? I know you said you were prisoner in the booth, but did you have a chance to kind of peek around at other guys who were selling stuff?
Oh, yeah, totally. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to hand this phone over to my business partner, because she was out there, and she was mingling, and she could probably give you a bird's eye view, and she could be your guys' eyes for a second. Hold on, here's Ashley Turrell.
Hello?
Hey, Ashley, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
We're doing pretty good. Welcome to Fight Nerd Radio. Now, you were walking around the Fan Expo. Tell us a little about some of the booths you saw there.
Oh, my gosh. Everybody was there, and their mother. Kappa had their RV in there. They had a huge booth set up, and they had an octagon set up in there that people were taking pictures in. Silver Star had a good thing going on there, too. We had Ultimate Nutrition next to us, too, and they had probably one of the sickest booths I've ever seen in my entire life, and they had Rashad Evans there signing autographs, which is pretty cool. In Round 5 and Jack Specific set up together, they built their own octagon, and they have Randy Couture signing, and I think they had people signing actually the whole time, but that's how I got my Randy signature, was because of those guys, so it was pretty cool. So.
Did you get any good free stuff while you were walking around the floor? Okay, very exciting. What was the booth that stood out the most in your mind?
You know, I might have to say either Ultimate Nutrition or Round 5 in Jack Specific. We actually had a lot of kids over at our booth playing the game, and all the fighters, every time they walked by our booth, they ended up stopping and playing. I couldn't get the Diaz boys away from us.
Now, tell us about the crowd. What kind of crowd was at this show? Did you have a chance to check out the grappling tournament?
I teased my head over there a couple times, but I didn't really get to. I actually asked a couple of the competitors how it was going, and I saw a lot of gold medals, so some people had a good trip.
Yeah, some people had better trips than others, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, so anything else exciting at the Fan Expo you want to talk about?
A lot of people were walking around. I'm like, I was telling you guys, I had a box under my arm at all times, and I think I have 30-something. I need to look at my and 30-something signatures on there, and all of them are fighters, but then I got Bruce Buffer, Ditch, Kai Tomasaki, so, it was pretty cool. There was always people walking around. James Wilkes actually spent some time with us, too, and he's a really nice guy, and it was pretty neat. It was very one-on-one. It was very personable. All the booths were really cool. Everybody that I talked to was just really, really nice, and all the fighters were really cool and good with the autographs and the pictures. So,
go Tito!
Tito wasn't there. Yeah, apparently he wasn't allowed, but I'll get him later.
Yeah, sorry, we just talked about that a little bit earlier on the show, how Tito and many other fighters were denied access to the Fan Expo, but that's another story. All right, so
yeah,
Ashley...
Well, I saw Arlovsky walking around, too, in the Mandalay Bay Hotel and Casino, but I didn't actually see him inside the Expo, and I don't know if he was at the fights at all either, so...
Ah, that's very... I didn't hear that one either. That's pretty interesting, though. Andre was there, but not exactly there.
Yeah, I saw him, and I'm like, oh, shoot, I don't have a Sharpie for my box. So I was like, oh, I'm sure I'll catch him later, because I ended up catching everybody else later. But he was the one that I wasn't able to find again, so.
All right, well, Ashley and Brett, thanks for your time. Can you tell us how we find more information about your product?
You can go on our website. It's fightdice.com. And everything's up there. Pretty soon we're going to be in some retail stores, too. I know OTM Fight Shop's going to be one of the ones picking us up, and they're looking for more, so.
All right, well, that's Ashley and Brett from the Extreme Fight Game. Guys, thanks a lot for your time.
All right, thank you.
So there you have it, a few different accounts of the UFC Fan Expo from a few of the attendees there. Hopefully we'll get to see some more of these events happening, and they won't be every 100 shows, because I'd really like to go to one of these. Maybe we can get one in my state even. There's a lot of these expos popping up now across the U.S. and across the world. Coming up, there's going to be a New York Mixed Martial Arts Expo. The International Mixed Martial Arts Expo is happening soon as well. There's going to be the MMA World Expo in October. There's a lot of these things happening, and I can't get to all of them, but hopefully you guys can. Give me a call, send me an email at thefightnerd@gmail.com, and I'll put your comments on the air. And with that said, if anybody else who's listening to the show was at the UFC Fan Expo this weekend, please send me an email, let me know how it was, and maybe I'll read it on the air. That email address again is thefightnerd@gmail.com. All right, so we're going to take a little break now. Coming up after the break is Mikey the Eastside Assassin Burnett. We're going to talk about some old school UFC and talk a little about UFC 100. But before we get to that, here's a word from one of our sponsors. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Cageside MMA, carrying brands from around the world such as Triumph United, Clinch Gear, Twins, Windy, and Bad Boy, as well as their own well-crafted brand of Cageside MMA products. CagesideMMA.com is your internet superstore for all MMA gear and apparel. Battle-tested and fighter-approved, you won't find better quality or better service from any other site carrying their variety of gear, apparel, and workout equipment. Head over to CagesideMMA.com where you can shop 24/7. Or call 919-477-1999 Monday through Friday. If you don't, you'll regret it. CagesideMMA.com.
And we're back on Fight Nerd Radio. Joining me now is a man who was fighting for the UFC way back when it was first in its teenage numbers, and he's been fighting as recent as 2006. And there he is right there. That's Mikey, the Eastside Assassin Burnett. Mikey, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you. It makes me feel much older when I think of those things. Teenage.
Makes me feel
back in the teens, and they're all the way up to 100 now. I'm not sure why they're still counting, but
I've lost track somehow, but you know, they keep reminding us what's happening. I mean, they've been pounding 100 into us for some time now, and it was actually a pretty good event, I think. How'd you feel about the show last night?
There's some good things I liked about it, and there's some bad things as far as overall. I mean, it was a good show. You know, there were some things that I would have liked this thing to happen at 100, it being a big deal, but, you know, the fights were good, and they were competitive, so, you know, that's what sells, so, that, yeah, I was happy with that.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have a chance to see Brock Lesnar taking on Mir last night? That was also pretty exciting, too. I mean,
yeah, you know, he's such a big, big man, you know, he's, and not taking anything away from him, obviously he's a... He's a very skilled athlete also, but, I mean, he's such a good guy.
He's a monster.
And, you know, he just kills strength when he gets on top of it. He's just so humongous. But his, you know, I thought Frank did a good job, and, you know, I just got caught in a position, really, that, you know, most people couldn't do to Frank, because Frank's an extremely strong dude himself. And that little around the head and grabbed the armpit. Well, I'm sure nobody... and very many training camps can do that to people. So, you know, Brock's doing a style that works for him, and, you know, it's paying off right now, but, you know, as far as just straight jets, is it correct? No, not really, but it's working for him, so, you know, they're power to him.
Do you think Brock has actually learned any jiu-jitsu since then? I mean, we definitely saw a lot more of the wrestling. Has he actually even shown more jiu-jitsu?
Because even no, I think he does. But I think it's a real basic. I don't think he's going to see. I think the only thing he really would learn on top is understand modern game. You know, now obviously, if you go through a fight, it's hard to do both of those. But I think he obviously get a lot better on top than he can modern. I don't think he's going to keep him down to do that.
All right, so I also saw George St. Pierre go five rounds with Thiago Alves. Did you expect St. Pierre to go five rounds with Alves?
Well, you know, much to knock on George, because I think he's obviously a really, really gifted athlete, and he's a great martial arts artist. I think sometimes he lets his mind get in the way of his talents, and not to say that Thiago Alves isn't everything that they were saying that he was, you know, because I think he is, and I think he's just a little too young for that fight with George. Not that, you know, that it may matter later, but George's I thought George might have been able to finish the fight, but obviously, you know, you got to settle down sometimes and try to you know, go ahead and just win the fight, and I think that's what he did at one point. You know, Thiago is an extremely tough kid. George struggled keeping him down, but you know, George's takedowns are monster for a guy at 170. Just, he can dictate where the fight takes place. Now, when you start getting the way you can dictate where the fight takes place, then you can make guys think you're wrestling in box or vice versa. And he got really good at that. Now, I mean, it's going to be a problem for anybody at 170.
Now, you said you think Alves is a little young. Do you think in the future, if they had a rematch, Alves is a little bit more mature in the fight, do you think he'd stand a better chance against St. Pierre and get a win, or just maybe last longer?
Well,
he can't last longer than five rounds, but...
Right, it's hard to say now, you know, because he's already been in there once. And I think what you saw last night was that Thiago Alves didn't understand how to lose. He had no idea how to lose, you know, and that's why he fought the way he did, and he really believed that he was going to get a knockout before the end of the day, or, you know, at some point. I mean, he never broke. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how his spirit feels after just getting dominated for five rounds. You know, I think he did an excellent job, but I don't think you ever saw that coming. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You can see in the fight that, you know, George had him in a bad position, he would escape. You know, he was just... He countered all night. Everything George did offensively, he was able to counter to seven. Wasn't ever able to mount much of an attempt. And, I think he's a young enough guy that it could, you know, he's gonna question some things in the next 6 months for sure.
Now, aside from the guys who are fighting for the title, is there anybody in your mind that stood out last night at the UFC 100?
Anybody that stood out?
Yeah, anybody you think could really go all the way in the future?
Man, you know, that's so hard to say now all the way, with so many things going on, like, Premier coming back, that guy's been around for a long time, with Thiago Alves, yeah, absolutely, he could be 170-pound champion in the future, you know, Willie, can he get another fight with George, I don't know, you know, I would say that George needs to maybe move up and go ahead and fight Anderson, you know, that's a fight that people might want to see, you know, and make good money, but... I don't see a lot of people don't fight Anderson right now, for sure.
Yeah, Anderson's at the top of the game right now.
Yeah, Ben's crazy. If I, you know, they can always go back and put BJ Finn 3 on. You know, they can do the two BJ Finn GSP, so maybe that's the way they'll go. I don't know.
Well, time will tell. So, I gotta ask you now, I mean, you've been with the sport since way back, UFC 16, I think was your debut. I mean, and now here we are at UFC 100. I mean, what's it been like to see the sport grow to the point it has today?
There's good and bad in every aspect. You know, everybody's a fighter now, and that takes, you know, not everybody's a fighter. The great part about it is that everybody is into martial arts, you know, and that everybody appreciates it, and, you know, the wrestling's getting really... You know, I felt like it always deserved, but the bad part's about it all, you know, when you go mainstream like that, you can get the vibe too, like what Brock did after the fight. You know, he's still a young guy making mistakes. I can't, Brock is never condemning for it. I've made those mistakes too, but the sport got to be something classier than boxing. I've always wanted to do better than boxing, and I think what my ultimate fighting has done is it's made boxing better than it used to be, and what about where boxing used to be.
Did you ever think,
which is not bad for 10 years, you know?
No, definitely not. Did you ever think mixed martial arts would get this big in the first place, or did you always think it might just have a little niche on its own?
There was times, mixed martial arts wasn't something, and everybody says this, it wasn't something that I necessarily picked. I was a pretty aggressive young guy, but, I'm not a controversial type person, I like to get along with people, and how I got into fighting was just making money. I wasn't making very much money. I was working at my brother's gym, and a guy told me I could make some money fighting. So that's how I got into it. I never really looked at it as I realized pretty quick that it was something that I could be good at, make some money at it, but I always, when I was a young guy, I would compete against other people, and I'm back to even when I was a little bit younger, I was just competing against myself. And it's awkward to see where it's at, but you gotta take the good with the bad. The good part about it is everybody watching it. The bad part about it is everybody's watching it.
Yeah, it's at a good crossroad. It's getting so much promotion, but at the same time, there's a lot of negative stuff happening too. And, like you said, take the good with the bad.
The what, Dale?
Exactly like you said, just take the good with the bad.
Yeah, you take the good with the bad. I don't think very many people win in the fight business. I think the martial arts business is an excellent thing for people to teach the youth. And how many people, adults, I've helped them lose 50 or 60 pounds. Maybe in the gain some self-confidence. I worked with a lot of law enforcement. One of them last week had to use it at work. There's some good things, but it's the fight business, where it gets into people fighting for nobody. I don't think anybody wins. I've done all of it. I've done the fighting. I've done the promoting. I've done the managing and training. Nobody really wins. Everybody gets pretty frustrated, In the last 15 years, I've had probably 4 or 5 camps, and they always break up for the same reasons. And it's typically guys competing against each other, not competing with themselves. I was doing a little seminar here yesterday at a local school, and I was talking to about that young guy. So, a couple of them Division One All-American wrestlers, tough kids, and a lot of potential. But I told them, then you start competing against each other. And so what happened at the line, we blew up. We blew each other up. It just was a good thing. You need to compete against yourself and not against, say Brock Lesnar or George St. Pierre. I think if George St. Pierre would start competing with himself and stop competing with the other guys, you'd see the George St. Pierre that we used to see fight Matthews and things like that. But he's caught up in the system.
Do you think a lot of fighters are just fighting now to get famous and make money, or do they actually want to fight? What do you think right now is going on with this as far as finances go?
I think right now a lot of guys want to be known for fighting, and I think some of them want to be famous, it's such a big thing now, and the guys everywhere, and they go, hey, I'm a fighter, and everybody's one almost now. And I think some of it's so mainstream, it's a popular sport to be in, and it's all over the place, so I think it's kind of a status symbol, like a car almost. People go, well, I train here and I drive this. I think it'll balance out. When boxing was in its heyday, it went through some things like that, and it balances out. So, I don't like to see young guys quitting school and doing things like they're good to go into fighting. So, it's all, hard to say.
Yep. Now, you got your start back in 1996 at Oklahoma Free Fight Federation 3, which was, I believe, a tournament. And that was your first—that was your first time fighting. How did you even hear about Ultimate Fighting and that kind of stuff back in that time?
In 96, the UFC was probably on like 4 or 5, and there were some fights going to happen here locally, and a local kickboxing promoter was going to put some on, and heard about me and called me up, and I wasn't working much. I was probably 20 years old. I 20 years old, somewhere around there. And I was like, I'm broke. I'll fight. I'm not a wrestling box. Let me know if that's one of the reasons that Ultimate Fighting, you know, they don't have any weight classes or anything like that, so I never see anything like that. I'm at chemo, and chemo was like, yeah, you should look into it, but like I said, there was no weight classes. When I went to California, to remember Shamrock, but he had about 10 types, and you know, we had 200 under and 200 over, and I don't know, I was walking around at 180, 185 some days on good days, and I was going to fight at 200 under, but, you know, it changed, and they brought out 170, and then they started bringing up more. Really, you know, now I'm walking around probably 160 pounds, so.
So there you go.
The size of nature, you know, I don't know what they say Tiago weighed last night, maybe almost 200 when he fought.
He's a big guy.
Yeah. And then George even looks bigger than him, huh? So, who knows? And George said he weighs 185, he wants to fight, right?
Yep.
Yeah, George looked bigger though, right? I thought he did. I didn't look better.
They're both pretty big guys to begin with. They're always coming in, you know, that, definitely, you know, cutting weight is part of the strategy these days, and George St. Pierre is a master of an Alvis too. They're both just, you know, they're big welterweights, that's for sure.
Well, and I didn't realize, you know, when I went back into it on the show, I didn't realize how much the body structures have changed, you know. I mean, body structures change in sports, but we had guys like John Lewis doing it, so we had the longer, naked guys. But we didn't, when I was first started, we didn't have guys cutting that much weight. You know, Frank Trigg was a humongous 70-pounder when I was fighting, and now he's a small 70-pounder, you know.
Yeah, health fight strategies changed, too, since those times. That's pretty amazing if you think about it, too, is how, in the course of 15, 20 years, how fast this sport has began to evolve and get to the point it is now.
Well, I think what's happened is all the grappling styles are just one style now. You don't see guys that go, hey, I'm just a sambo guy, I'm just a wrestler. And even if they say I'm just a wrestler like Brock, he knows jiu-jitsu. I mean, he's working on it every day, so he understands it. You know, I mean, I've worked out with Cook there. I know he knows tons of other guard and ex-guard, and he knows some crazy shit. So, I mean, it's not like they don't know. Wrestling's just all become one thing. It's not just jiu-jitsu or just amateur wrestling or just judo. Now, these guys, you know, they do all of it.
And I want to ask you a few things about the Lions then now, because you were part of the original Lions Den team, which back in the early days of UFC was the team to be with. And I know, like, you know, most of the Lions Den has kind of left. Some guys have gone in their own direction, other guys have left the team, and you're one of the guys who left. Do you talk to anybody from the Lions Den still?
Once in a while, you know. I talked to Kim maybe 6 months ago. I talked to Bolander maybe 3 months ago. I was talking to Pete Williams there for a while, but he's on Hawaii time, so we don't catch up as much. You know, once in a while, not much. I think, you know, a lot of times it's that was really hard times and good times at the same time for everybody, and you don't want to go digging up the graves too much. Skeletons start popping out of the closet. I don't want to start talking about times when I drink or huge. You know, I got kids now, so
yep.
I don't want to talk about.
All right, now.
I'll tell you what I'm saying. You know, I don't search into the closet that much, you know?
Yep, I gotcha. I just want to ask a quick question about Ken, because Ken was supposed to fight Kimbo a little while back at the last Elite XC show, and Ken kind of pulled out, and instead we got Seth Petruzzelli fighting Kimbo. Now, if Ken had actually fought Kimbo, who do you think would have won that fight?
Who knows? And you know, I mean, I don't want to bring any of the bad talk about it, but, I mean, who knows? I think Kimbo's a street fighter. Obviously, he's doing pretty good. He's on the Ultimate Fighter, you know, but it's... Ken, I don't know what Ken does much anymore. I haven't talked to him much. With the Ken Shamrock that I know, he's not that guy anymore. So I don't know the guy that fights now. I don't know that's not the guy that I met 15 years ago. You know, it's respectful change both of us have, you know. So when we ran into each other 2 years ago, you know, we gotta get back acquainted. We don't really know each other much anymore. I haven't spent much time with him in the last 10 years.
All right. Well, speaking of Ultimate Fighter, you, of course, were on the Ultimate Fighter Season 4, and that was pretty much your reemergence back into the UFC spotlight. What was that like for you, getting called back onto that show?
Looking back on it, it was obviously a comeback's difficult to do anyway in any sport, you know. But they're on a reality show, it's almost impossible. And I was in the middle of a divorce, and I'd been through some rough situations. But it was a good escape, and it was a good experience for me. I met some of the greatest people I've met in the business. On that show, you know, Chris Lytle is one of my best friends. That guy's gone out of his way so many times since I've been injured to try to help me out. He's talking about coming down and doing a pretty similar at my school. I mean, just little things, you know, that go a long ways for as far as telling me to speak to the audience. You know, I get depressed some days. I get a bad neck. I don't teach as much. And some days I hurt really, like this morning, I've probably taken 5 or 6 pain pills. And, you know, I get pretty aggravated, but then someone like this will call me. It's a pretty, the best people in the world are in that business. The problem is that you get the worst people in the world in that business, too.
Yep. Now, how is the neck, by the way, feeling?
Do what?
How is the neck overall? I know you had some surgery done a little while back.
I never did get surgery. I was supposed to get surgery, and part of that was my fault. I got sick here in Oklahoma, and I didn't make the surgery day in Vegas, and that was almost two and a half years ago. And then they just kind of blackballed me after that, and didn't really deal with me, you know, and tried a lawsuit. But when I got a new MRI in Vegas maybe a month ago, and I came back, and my doctor read it here, and wasn't good. I got a lot of paralysis in my left arm, and then I got severe arthritis all through my neck and back. But, you know, what do you do? You know, he doesn't want me to teach. He doesn't want me to be around the sport, but then at the same time, he's a pretty smart guy. You know, you got to make a living. You know what you got to do, you know. The hardest parts for me most of the time has been coming back and trying to stay sober.
Mm.
That makes sense. I've been sober for 10 years.
Congratulations.
I'm trying to stay sober, but I live on pain medicine. So, you know, at first, I didn't want to take it, but then it got to a point where I couldn't teach, or I couldn't get up, you know, without it. So.
Yeah, it sounds pretty rough. I can't even imagine that kind of pain, you know?
Well, you know, some days it's bad. Maybe it's been really bad. Some days it's not so bad. I think some of us have been a lot lucky out of our life as far as, you know, things getting good and bad, but, I'm an old school guy, I'll make it, you know, regardless, whether I get an next surgery, I mean, I am who I am, I'm gonna make it through life. It's not like I'm gonna be living in a dumpster because I got a broken neck, you know, I don't have anybody have that much control over me.
Yep. I know, I was asking about your neck because there were some rumors going around recently that were saying you were going to be taking on Pat Miletich in a rematch coming up. Is there any truth to that right now? Still negotiating? What's going on with that?
There was. That was circulated around the same area. I got offered to fight from the same guy that I started fighting here in Tulsa. And me and the guy don't see eye to eye. I don't see eye to eye with very many promoters because they're in it for money. You know, most of them don't fight. This guy actually fought. I mean, they do a commodity at the end. And he offered me $50,000, and I saved it on text message. And then I went out and I got that new MRI, and when you talked to my doctor, and they said, absolutely not. I'm talking to the boxing commissioner, and he said, no way. You know, you have paralysis in your arm. You know, it's not that he may not be capable of, you know, being competitive. It's just the idea that we know that where you're at, you know, and it's not going to happen. So, I leaked it knowing I was going to go see a doctor. My big plan was getting that surgery and be back in fighting about 2 years ago, though, you know. So, you know, all I ever wanted was doing to do the right thing. And I don't know if that's going to happen or not, though. You know, I don't have a lot of faith in it.
Well, we'll be definitely keeping updated with that situation. I know a lot of fans would like to see that rematch because it was a controversial decision back when that first happened. I think it was UFC 18. I wouldn't mind seeing that again.
I don't know. You know, the UFC is somewhat running from its past. I got a text message from Keith Ortiz this weekend on one of his buddies, and Keith wasn't even allowed into the event.
I heard about that. Yeah, I couldn't believe that. It's like I heard they weren't even...
Frank Shamrock wasn't allowed, you know, wasn't invited to the event. Ken Shamrock wasn't invited to the event. Tank Abbott wasn't invited to the event. Dan Severn wasn't invited to the event. There's so many guys. They're just, hey, whatever, fuck these guys. These guys, those are the guys that I was around, you know, the Mark Coleman. Thank God Mark Coleman was there, you know, but, they just tend to brush over the past. You're like a commodity, and you're like an out-of-date coffee. You're no good anymore, you know, and I think that's good. We're going to see a surge of guys that, you know, like I said, I think a lot of guys get into fighting that maybe shouldn't, but even the guys they're going to get out of it, and they're going to be where I'm at. And I, you know, I'm just where they're going to be 10 years from now. That's all. Because I've been where they're at now. I know where the road goes, and it's a scary fucking road for a lot of those guys, you know. A lot of them won't have job skills. A lot of fighters don't want to be teachers. To be a teacher is way different than to be a competitor, you know. I'm going to my gym, and no, man, I'm not trying to compete. I'm trying to teach you how to become a better jiu-jitsu guy, not me. This fighter is going to a mentality where they want to show you what they know, not make you better at it, you know. And I don't know, it's strange.
I'm not a fan of the way the UFC has been treating their guys. Sorry?
It'll be interesting to see. You know, I think the neck injuries are going to become more prevalent in the fighting, too. That's why I'm saying such a difference over my case. It's not always just the what's going to happen to me. Like I said, I'm a pretty strong guy, and I do okay, so I'm going to get my... But it's the next guy, if they go and they say, hey, fuck him, let's take care of his neck, even though he heard it on our show, they're going to listen to the next guy, too. They're setting the precedent. You know, so when fans give me grief, they act like I'm attacking the sport. I'm not attacking the sport. I'm looking out for the welfare of myself and my colleagues. And that's every fighter out there. They're going to say it's not going to happen to me. That's what I said, too. It's not going to happen to me. I won't get hurt. You know, and it should happen sometimes. And then there's no one there, and they don't back up what they said they're going to do. Then you know, everybody watches reality show. In a reality show, most people, I guess, forget that it's filmed ahead of time and edited.
Yep.
I'd already been to an MRI and been told I had a broken neck and had pain medicine by the time I ran into the wall. You know, I mean, everybody's jerking their thumb in the wall. I'm like, come on. No, I've been wrestling for 20 years. Now I didn't have my neck running into a fucking wall, you know. I think I did it on a workout with Kutcher and Jorge Rivera one day, but I asked the doctor and he said he couldn't tell, you know.
All right, now, on the subject of, you mentioned your school, you have currently a new fight school you opened up. How's that going? You got any new fighters coming out of there?
It's good. You know, I've had some fighters. Like I said, I don't get around fighting too much. I got a group of guys, and they're trying to put some things together, and I stand behind them, and I'll teach them as much technique as they want to. But as far as going to fights on Friday night, I don't know anymore. You know, been there, done that. I like teaching martial arts. I like to help people stay healthy and learn how to defend themselves. I teach probably 18 hours a week, and the rest of the time I'm doing working with youth and trying to, you know, better other people's situations than my own. And the fighting aspect is not the draw to me anymore. It's more the I want martial arts students, you know. And I have about 75, 80 of them right now, and it's good. You know, I got kids. I got women, and I got families that come in, so it's good. But you know, the fight part of it, I don't want to do. It's too much headache, you know. And then the fighters get mad at you because they're not getting done right, and you're telling, screaming at them, you know, and they don't hear you. Hey, they don't do anybody right. They're not doing me right either, you know. I've trained probably 10 or 12 really, really good guys here in the last 15 years. Some of them own their own schools and stuff now. And I've never made a nickel off any of my fighters, ever. They just got to a point where I got an 11-year-old boy and I got an 8-year-old daughter and, you know, shit. I got to take care of my kids and, you know, they can work something out and come join the club and they want to be fighters. They absolutely can and they can do it at my club. I just don't want to do it all day, every day.
So it sounds like you're a lot happier now just being a teacher instead of being a fighter.
Absolutely, you know, I'm in transition. I'm not the guy that, you know, everybody wants you to be the young fighter that you are. I'm not that guy anymore. I don't even know that guy. You know, it's pretty, I don't want to say self-absorbed, but definitely not very experienced in life, you know what I mean? And that's why I was talking about Thiago. You know, he didn't have a lot of life experience yet. I know he probably had more than I did as far as going up in Rio, but this is going to be a huge life experience here as far as life-changing situations. They just keep coming. I mean, after you turn a certain age for me, it just always came, and it's not. I find a lot of balance in teaching, so, you know, I get a lot out of one of my students has gone from 235 pounds to 180 now.
Wow.
And man, that's huge for me. You know, that's more to me. That's better than getting the guy to me. You know, the personal reward.
All right, well, Mikey, thank you very much for being here. I appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you again.
Nah, man. Thank you guys so much.
All right, Mikey. Have a good day. Thank you. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Hoodlum Fight Gear, gear made by fighters for fighters. Check out their gear and apparel at hoodlumfightgear.com. Also by Boston Brawler. Whether you're a Red Sox fan or a Yankees fan, you can't deny good designs. Check them out at bostonbrawler.com. And also MMA Worldwide Magazine. Check out the Fight Nerd column of that every other month at MMAWorldwide.com. And welcome back to Fight Nerd Radio. You just heard from Mikey the Eastside Assassin Burnett, former Lion's Den member and old-school UFC fighter. Had a few interesting things to say. If that interview sounded a little chaotic or hectic to you, that's because Mikey was actually at a water park with his kids, and he was still nice enough to give me the time to talk a little bit with him. So I appreciate his time and effort. He was definitely a little preoccupied at the time, but nonetheless, he still gave us a pretty good interview, and I appreciate that time he gave us. Something I want to talk about that Mikey had mentioned during the interview was the welfare of the fighters, especially as they get older. As Mikey had mentioned, a lot of fighters don't really have too many skills they can fall back on outside of fighting. And what happens once they're past their prime and they can't fight? A lot of guys don't want to necessarily teach, or maybe aren't that good at teaching, and it's not necessarily a good way to go out. I mean, we know there's plenty of blue-collar fighters out there, guys who actually have full-time jobs to begin with and train on the side. The problem with that is they can't quite commit to training 100%. Now, what happens when you become a full-time fighter and that's all you're doing 24/7? What happens when you can't do it anymore and your body just quits on you and says, no more fighting, we can't take it? And that's a problem. The UFC still has no union. I don't believe there's any health care plan for the UFC or for any of the UFC's fighters that are under contract to it or any old-school fighters. Maybe they could tell me for sure. But I'm pretty sure that there's no health care plan for UFC fighters. And this comes back to something that had been talked about a year or two ago when Randy Couture initially retired, and that was a fighter's union. How important is it to have a fighter's union at this point in time? I'd say really important. As the sport of mixed martial arts continues to grow, there's going to be a lot more fighters, a lot more people coming in trying to make it big in the fight world. But if there's nothing else they can fall back on, what's going to happen once they're retired? Not everybody's going to be a big, huge name like Brock Lesnar or Randy Couture. It's going to be a lot of smaller guys who maybe appeared in UFC once or twice and fought tons of other smaller shows, became journeymen of the sport. What's going to happen to their health and their families? With no big paydays anymore and sometimes not having any necessarily real skills in the real world to keep going, not much I can really say. It's at this point, it's really just speculative, but it's something that's not going to be a pretty sight coming up in the next few years. Especially since right now, as I mentioned, is a transition time in the UFC. We're seeing a lot of the old-school guys finally hang up the gloves, or at least begin to hang up the gloves, and start to leave the sport. We're still seeing guys like Don Fry, Randy Couture, Chuck Liddell. They're still taking fights, but not much left with them. And as these old-school guys begin to leave, the young guys are going to start coming in. The young lions are going to begin to pop up now, and we're going to see what they have inside them. Which might be why there's no real poster boy right now, since all the big names are leaving the sport slowly, or on the way to leaving the sport. And now we're left with the younger guys who need to step up and be a little bit more mature when it comes to their decisions that they make on the microphone and in the ring. But I'd like to get your opinion on what you think about all this stuff. Do you think fighters need to unionize and have some sort of financial back? Do you think fighters need to form a union finally and get stuff together? Or do you think that's really just the responsibility of each fighter on their own to be able to handle their own business and to have something to fall back on? So let me know. You could send your response to thefightnerd@gmail.com. And if I like what you say, I'll read it on the air. And if I don't like what you say, I'll probably still read it on the air just so I could argue with it. Alright, so I want to thank my guests once again, Mikey Burnett, for being here. I also want to thank my sponsors, CageSideMMA.com, HoodlumFightGear.com, BostonBrawler.com, and MMA Worldwide Magazine. And I want to thank you, the listener, for bearing with me and listening to the show once again. It can only get better from here, folks. I'm the Fight Nerd. Thanks for listening.